I'd kind of like to confirm what that lady said. Apparently, Steve Irwin made a comment about thinking that he would be killed by an automobile at a young age. And if that's true, then certainly the rest of what she said is. I didn't know it at the time, but indeed, any number of you have fast-blasted me. The Corvette Stingray is correct. You know, what do I know about these things? I don't know a lot about automobiles. When I was younger, and I was involved in radio, folks. When other guys my age were into girls and cars and girls and cars, I was fooling with radios, taking radios apart, building them, figuring them out. I was in love with radio. That was my early first love, actually, radio. So I didn't know that, but it is interesting, isn't it? It was called the Stingray. Something to think about if he indeed did make that comment. All right, coming up in a moment is Roger Tulsis. Very appropriate, I would say. Listen to this story. Dateline, Washington, September 28th. Few days ago, the House approved a bill Thursday that would grant legal status to President Bush's warrantless wiretapping program with new restrictions. Republicans called it a test before the election of whether Democrats want to fight or coddle terrorists. The Democrats' irrational opposition to strong national security policies that help keep our nation secure should be of great concern to the American people. That's a quote from Majority Leader John Bonner, of Republican from Ohio, in a statement after the bill passed 232-191. So it was a close call. Quote, to all those to always have reasons why you just can't vote yes, I think speaks volumes when it comes to which party is better able and more willing to take on the terrorists and defeat them, said he. Democrats shot back that the war on terrorism shouldn't be fought at the expense of civil and human rights. The bill approved by the House, they argued, gives the president too much power, leaves the law vulnerable to being overturned by a court. It is ceding the president's argument that Congress doesn't matter in this area. According to Chris Van Hollen, a Democrat from Maryland, the bill sponsored by Republican Heather Wilson, a Republican from New Mexico, that gives legal status under certain conditions to President Bush's warrantless wiretapping of calls and emails between people on U.S. soil making calls or sending emails to those in other countries. Under the measure, the president would be authorized to conduct such wiretaps if he notifies the House and Senate Intelligence Committees and congressional leaders, believes an attack is imminent, and later explains the reason and names of the individuals and groups involved, renews his certification every 90 days. The Senate could also vote on a similar bill before Congress recesses at the end of the week. Leaders concede the differences between the versions are so significant they cannot reconcile them into a final bill that can only be delivered to President Bush before the November 7th congressional elections. For its part, the White House announced it strongly supported passage of the House version, but was not satisfied with it, adding that the administration, quote, looks forward to working with Congress to strengthen the bill as it moves through the legislative process. Now, it is indeed timely that Roger Tulsis, who is a Los Angeles private investigator specializing in electronic countermeasures, would be here. In the past 30 years, he has swept over 2,500 locations for bugs and wiretaps. In recent years, his business has included helping victims of electronic harassment and mind control. Electronic harassment takes place if someone uses any electronic device to aid them in invading your personal privacy, property, for the purpose of gathering information illegally, or for the purpose of causing physical harm. Mr. Tulsis uses over $100,000 of high-tech equipment to try to identify the sources of electronic harassment. In a moment, Roger Tulsis. All right. right. I would like to welcome Roger Tulsis to the program, and I might have his last name. I might be mispronouncing it. Roger, welcome to the show. Am I slaughtering your last name?
No, Art. As a matter of fact, last time we did a show together, you had it right that time as well.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So
all right.
You're in the Philippines now?
That's where I am, Manila.
Wow, you went from high desert over to the tropics. That must have been a change, huh?
A bit of a change, yes. From hot, very dry weather to hot, very wet weather.
Okay. Well,
at any rate, listen, you heard me read the story at the top of the hour. So yes. Here we are. And where, indeed, are we, Roger? Is it 1984, George Orwell? Is all this coming now to fruition?
Well, absolutely. You know, the last show I did with George, we went over what I refer to as the 1984 prophecies. And I don't know if people can still download that show from your streaming or not, because that was almost a complete show about looking at all those things that he included in his book relating to the telescreens that kept surveillance on us in our own homes and video systems that actually looked at our facial expressions to make determinations whether we were telling the truth or not. But we went into great detail on that show, so I don't want to try to rehash a lot of that. But, you know, the main thing about this is that we need to look at the supreme law of the land, the Fourth Amendment of our Bill of Rights, which is in force and effect. That has to do with, you know, seizures, searches, and warrants. And just to go through it quickly, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, effects against unreasonable searches and seizures should not be violated, and no warrants issued but upon probable cause, supported by oath and affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized.
All right, Roger, I'm going to play devil's advocate with you a little bit on this subject, because I'm not positive that I disagree with the administration's position on this. And a caller in the first hour said something that I want to kind of run by you here. And I don't disagree that our rights and our privacy is to some degree certainly being invaded right now by what's going on. I mean, that's clear. And so is it crushing the Bill of Rights and Constitution? Yes. To some degree it is. But as the caller pointed out, during the Second World War, we had an equal, if not greater, crushing of those rights, constitutional rights and so forth. But, you know, after the war ended, they were restored. And in fact, one could even argue enhanced. And everything you just said a moment ago, while true, I think could be used to argue for these warrantless wiretaps under the current circumstances as easily as against them.
Well, the invasion of the privacy during World War II, I don't think was anywhere near as invasive as the fact that the NSA now has immediate access to everybody's phone lines, everybody's ISP lines, and also the ability through satellites to look through your structure of your home to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
All this is pre-wired. Part of it's pre-wired under CALEA, which was passed in 1996, which required all the phone companies to tax your bill so that they would pre-wire your phone for wiretaps, meaning that any agency like the NSA or other police agency can literally sit down at a computer now and by using long-line networks, just through a keystroke, throw listening devices, which in this case now would be a hard drive, to record all of your conversations and all of your work on the Internet real time.
Sure.
Now, tell me how in World War II there was anything as invasive as that.
Well, look, times, I wouldn't argue, times have changed. The ability, the electronic ability of these agencies is far greater than it was then to do these kinds of things. But under the circumstances, with the threat, and I'm sure you certainly agree, or, well, maybe I should ask, you do agree we are living under a threat, right?
Well, I do agree we are living under a threat, but I don't see the point of sacrificing the Constitution. I don't see the problem with having a warrant for a wiretap. In other words, when this judge recently, I'm looking at the article here, this District Judge Anna Diggs Taylor, her statement was that she thought that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which required having warrants, was adequate. And basically she said there are no hereditary kings in America, no powers created by the Constitution. So what she's saying is that the balance, the whole idea of checks and balances, in the sense that you can have an executive branch that's going to say, oh, we want to just wiretap wherever we want to wiretap, and the Constitution says, well, you can't do that without the judiciary giving authorization, and therefore it's a check and balance between the executive branch and the judiciary, and hopefully things don't get to the point where our rights are totally crushed. So once you put that check and balance to the side, saying, you know, I'm a king now, we don't, I don't have to go ask permission about doing these kind of things. I'm just going to flip the switches. And it's not only just listening to whomever they want to listen to, because it's not, the reason that they don't want these warrants is because they are not looking at people that they really have as a target. A lot of what's happening now is because all of our calls are going through this NSA facility, which is in Virginia. And you have football fields of supercomputers, and these supercomputers listen to words. They listen to human conversation, and they make determinations whether there's any words passing through those conversations that are of interest. Same thing on the ISP. If you type an email and there are words in that email that are of interest, that means there's kind of a dragnet going on. And from that dragnet, they're going to find phone numbers of interest that have keywords that they're looking for.
So I understand. I understand electronically and from a software point of view how this occurs. I'm just not sure that I feel threatened by it.
Okay, but I just want to make the final point.
Okay.
The reason they don't want warrants is because they're not naming people. They're vacuum cleaning all the communications in the world, including us here, and they are going to, on this fishing expedition, they're going to find certain lines that are going to have information that's relevant to what they consider to be something worth investigating. And so they can't even name the person until they've vacuum cleaned the word and found the line that it's on. And therefore, we're kind of, the invasion is not based on a probable cause. It's based on a machine vacuum cleaning, looking for offensive words and words that may be a problem. And then once it's detected that, then they're going to single that line out, and they're going to make that line.
Okay, I'm with you. You have just explained to me why they need warrantless searches. I mean, you've just given me the reason why they need them. They may not know. For example, if we've got a computer looking for bomb or perhaps nuclear weapon, or I don't know what words would trigger it, probably a zillion. If you know, they're looking for somebody who wants to harm, do mass destruction to many Americans. Now, how can they name that person if they don't know who it is? Now, if a machine comes up and finds that person, well, then fine. They then have the name or the number, and they can go look for it. I am playing devil's advocate, but I do believe this to some degree, Roger. I mean, we are under a very, very serious threat here. A nuclear device could go off in the United States, destroying a city or many cities, or some sort of biological weapon or something horrible could occur, because we know these people want us dead. They don't want to bargain with us. They don't want to negotiate with us. They just want to kill us. Now, that's a tough enemy to have, Roger.
Yes, I agree with you, but you know, most of these people will go down to 7-Eleven and they'll buy a nameless cell phone, you know, a track phone or one of these other phones where you don't sign up for anything. And here you have the focus of most of these systems that at least are the ones that are of the CALEA law enforcement type, where they pre-wired everybody's phone in America. And so for those people that have those unlimited resources where they can change phones every day or two, it's almost impossible for this kind of vacuum cleaning system to really track these people that well. So, you know, I'm just saying that when they had us spend millions and millions of dollars getting all of our phone lines pre-wired into the NSA. The thing about the cell phone industry and these cell phones, and also voice over IP, which is a whole other thing. You're talking about packets mm-hmm. that are not a, that are not one line of stream. Packets can end up going on an individual basis. They can even go different routes. If you look at the way IP systems operate, a phone conversation, part of it could be looping through thousands of miles in one direction, and part can be in other thousands of miles. And when they land at the final target end site, they get reconstituted back together again. And that's even more difficult to try to do.
Well, okay. I take your word that all of this is going on, and I'm sure it is. But again, I ask you, are you sure it is not justified?
Well, I personally think that you really have to be cautious about surrendering all these rights that these founding fathers put in place for a real reason.
Well, that's why it's so controversial. There's no question about it. I mean, we're arguing about this.
Right. They always felt that the government was the real problem, and that it would be more likely that tyranny would come from within than abroad. And that's why they wanted to put these three branch checks and balances in place. And the fact that they have been abrogated, it, to me, is personally distressing. I really think that we should be focusing. You're talking about a nuclear weapon coming in on a freighter, in a container, and yet if you look at the percentage of containers that are actually screened for these kind of things, I think the percentage is very, very low.
Well, it is, and the ability, of course, the manpower and the ability to look at the contents of each and every one is limited. We don't have endless manpower. We have giant borders. We have lots of problems, and I assume that's why they're following, you know, this warrantless wiretap thing in the first place, because we really can't otherwise do it. And so, Roger, I'm not real happy with it going on either. I don't think any American would be when you see your rights being eroded. But again, during World War II, there was very serious erosion of those rights. However, after the threat ended, so did the erosion of rights. And in fact, it was even enhanced after that. So isn't it possible that whatever it is that's happening right now will be ended when the threat is ended?
You know, I think with mission creep, and I think you probably know what that is.
I do.
You know, where, you know, we're just going to do a little bit today, and tomorrow we're going to do a little bit more, until next thing you know, you're into this 1984 Big Brother society where mm-hmm. you got a camera in your own house that that watches you, and you don't really know when you're being watched and when you're not being watched. So the question becomes, if you abrogate the Fourth Amendment and say, oh, well, you know, we're going to fudge it now. We're no longer going to need warrants on that. The next thing you're going to know is that and we're almost there in the sense that most people's or a lot of people's computers have cameras on them. And if that computer is on an ISP full-time, you don't really know whether the thing really is sending out the images or not. It's kind of difficult to tell, unless, of course, you pull your actual cable from the back of the computer when you're not looking at, when you're not working with it, which I suggest doing anyway. I think that's a good idea. One more thing on this, the thing we haven't talked about, data mining, because mm-hmm. one of the very other big stories is when AT&T admitted that they are giving their whole database relating to phone connection information over to the NSA, and so are the other phone companies. They say that all the numbers that are dialed between everybody is their business information, and you can't have no objection what they do with their business information. But, of course, that information lists every number and every contact that everybody makes with one another. It wouldn't be difficult to go back in that database and form a chart of everybody that Art Bell knows and everybody Art Bell talked to for the past 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, in the old days, when they had normal wiretaps and they gave warrants, judges gave warrants for Mafia and the rest of these people they tapped, they would have dialed number recorders. And the preliminary way they would do it, if they weren't sure they were going to give them a full wiretap, was ask them to issue a warrant for a dialed number recorder. Now, what it would do is it wouldn't take the conversation content down, but it would take down the numbers that a person called. And as a consequence, if they started calling other mafia people, as an example, then the court, looking at that information, would then issue a warrant based on the dialed number recorder.
But all right, Roger, hold it there for you. You're going to have to hold that point. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back with Roger Tulsis. I'm Art Bell from Manila in the Philippines. We'll be right back. Good morning. Good afternoon or evening or whatever it is, wherever you are. This is one hell of a topic, actually. Scott in Fresno, California says those who would sacrifice liberty for security deserve neither. You are a coward, referring, I'm sure, to me. Well, with the exception of you are a coward party, quoting, of course, Thomas Jefferson. And I understand that quote perfectly well, Scott. I really do. But you know, our president, those who are elected, serve to protect us. They serve to protect the nation and the Constitution, what's left of it. And I certainly agree it's been somewhat shredded along with the Bill of Rights. There's no question. I'm not arguing that. I'm saying that we live in times that demand that for them to do their job, I'm making the case that they need this vacuum cleaner. They need this ability to look at information randomly. And if they find something that's really awful, they need the ability to pursue it. Now, normally, to get a wiretap, it requires the judiciary. In other words, judiciary, some judge somewhere has to say, yeah, there's enough of a reason. But we live in a day and age where the opposite argument that Roger made, or the same argument, really, can be applied for the need for this vacuum cleaner. There's so damn much information out there that in order to know where your threat is, where your threat is coming from, you need this large net of information. And without it, you're not going to have a name to take to a judge. But with it, you might save a U.S. city or many. I'm going to make that side of the argument. We'll be right back. Let me say this again, Roger. There's absolutely no question about the fact that we live in a new day and age. Now, this day and age allows data mining. It allows, and by the way, we ought to explain, and we'll hear in a moment, what data mining is, and a lot of other things, and warrantless taps, and the ability for NSA computers to listen for dangerous phrases or words that might indicate somebody wishing to do us harm. Again, we have an enemy right now that does not want to bargain with us. They don't want America to pull out of here or there or else. They want to kill us, whether it's with biological weapons that would sweep across the nation, killing all that they come in contact with, or a nuclear device that we know they just about have their hands on or will shortly that would erase a city or many cities in the United States. I mean, this is an unprecedented danger that requires, it seems to me, unprecedented surveillance. So, Roger, I'll tell you what. Let's get down to definitions. Data mining. What is data mining?
Okay. Well, before we get to data mining, I want to just turn this around for a second, just to finish up on what we were talking about. Let's say that I ask Art Bell what things is he willing to allow the government to look at on a warrantless basis. And I just made a little list here, and I'm curious to ask you, would it be okay for the government to, on a warrantless basis, look at your phone records? Just a yes or no answer.
Yes.
Okay. How about your dialed number information, all the people you call?
Yes.
How about your bank records?
Yes.
How about your credit card purchases?
Yes.
How about your health records?
I can't see the relevance for that one.
Okay, how about your gas credit card receipts?
My gas credit card receipts. Well, I guess you already covered that, really, with my bills, but...
Yes or no?
Yeah.
Okay, store purchases.
Yeah.
ISP browsing records?
Sure.
Library records?
Sure.
Art, what's left? If you have given permission on this list so far,
mm-hmm.
What of your privacy is left?
Not a whole lot. But, Roger, you know what? None of those things that you mentioned, am I am I afraid for people to see? I mean, I'm not hiding anything. So it's pretty damn boring stuff.
Well, I understand that. But the reason the Founding Fathers wrote the Fourth and Fifth Amendments...
I'm very well aware why they did that.
This is the information that they sought to protect from mm-hmm. government without a judicial order. Mm-hmm. Because if we go through this list here, if I've got all that information, I pretty much can tell anywhere from 80 to 90% about what Art Bell's life is about, what he does, mm-hmm. where he goes, what he purchases, who he knows.
And Roger, my life is pretty much an open book anyway.
Well, I understand
that. Look, I understand the underlying theory and what you're trying to point out here. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that in an honest response to what you asked, with the exception of my medical records, and that's really nobody's business, and it's not relevant to terrorism as far as I know, with that exception, I don't care about the rest of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what they're counting on. I think that they're counting on everybody saying, well, let's just have an open book, and we can go into these records without warrants, and everybody's life is fully investigatable under a microscope, and we'll just take the Fourth and Fifth Amendment, and we'll just cancel it. We don't need it anymore.
Because, well, I didn't say there shouldn't be oversight with regard to what's done with the information.
Well, that's
there
basically,
has to be.
Yeah, that is.
There
the
has
issue,
to be
though,
oversight.
Is that we're all this is now happening on a warrantless basis.
Mm-hmm.
Especially
Ben. Well, Roger, I can understand the reason why they need warrantless searches. And the reason is because the flow of information is so gigantic that there's really no other way for the authorities to look for the people that they're looking for and find them if they have to deliver a name and address and go in front of a judge first. Otherwise, if people are allowed to talk about where they're going to place the nuclear weapon, when they're going to detonate it, how the cells get together and, you know, do all the things that the terrorists would do to destroy the United States, then if there's no other way to get it, then I guess I give up those rights and I say, look, I have nothing to hide. Go ahead and do it. But when we end the threat and when and if we win the war, it ends and we go back to the way things were.
Well, there's no sunset on the Patriot Act at the moment. I think they just renewed it for a bunch of years. But anyway, my question becomes is that if you say go ahead and take all these privacies away from me now, have we altered the nature of what freedom is as a foundation
Yes.
in America?
We have, yes.
Well, we know that we've been successful for the past 200 years on these principles that the Founding Fathers put in place, especially the Bill of Rights. When we start giving executive branches the ability to cancel sections of the Constitution, where do we start going into tyranny?
Well, tyranny, of course, would be a misuse of that information, wouldn't it, Roger?
It would be, but how are you going to keep somebody as this court, this... lady, this judge said here about having someone being a king with the powers of a king, as mm-hmm. she explained in her ruling here. I don't have the phrase right in front of me.
That's all right, Roger. Suppose you were the president of the United States and you had some pretty solid information that a group, let's call them Al-Qaeda, was trying to get a nuclear weapon into the U.S. or perhaps even already had them here. And they were doing the final stages of preparation to detonate them, or that something horrible was going to be released, some biological terror release that would go across the land like a firestorm, killing everybody it came in contact with. If you were the president, Roger, and as your CIA director or NSA director, I told you that this was the case and that we needed information on a scale that we've been talking about tonight, Roger, you would say what?
Well, I would say you need to direct these surveillances as we have always had in the past, where you're really looking at those individuals that you're doing a direct investigation on. You know, this data mining where you're just going through and just looking for anybody saying anything, mm-hmm. you know, it moves very far into the police state. Where words or speaking words, or we've taped something off somebody's line and let's just send the Gestapo over to arrest everybody And of course, you know that the other thing that that apparently has been happening is that the government suspended habeas corpus, which is another very basic principle that's been with us for hundreds of years, coming from England.
Okay, let me ask you this, Roger. Have you actually seen any Nazi stormtroopers arresting people based on emails or telephone calls they made in the U.S. yet? Can you document that happening?
Well, I do. I have one client who ended up, he was in a library, and he was visiting websites that had to do with Islamic stuff. He's not an Islamic guy, but he was doing research on the subject matter, and he was at the library connecting it. He spent time at this library. Anyway, next thing you know, in about 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, there is a uniformed local police officer and some guys from the TSA come in, and they literally take him out of the library with his computer, forcibly seize him and remove him, take him out to a truck, download his whole hard drive, copy the hard drive, and give him his computer back, interrogate him for a period of time, and then send him back, and then release him.
And then released him.
And then released him. But it freaked this poor guy out. I mean, you know,
I'm sure it did.
The library, they asked about, went to the librarian, said they were going to do this, asked who the guy was, and, you know, she knew who it was. And literally came and removed him. There was not a warrant. There was not a court order. There was nothing other than just removing him and removing his information, copying his information. And they didn't ask permission. They just did it.
Okay. Well, that's not exactly, certainly that's a worrisome story. But
when,
it's not exactly
you,
what I meant.
When do you get worried?
Was he tossed in jail?
No, they didn't toss him in jail, but they copied all of his information on a warrantless basis. I'm just wondering, when do you get worried about what's happening?
Well, I'm worried about what's happening.
Well, where is the limit for you? You apparently think everything's okay.
I'm trying to answer your question. I think that the limit is when you begin to see a misuse of that information, when you see a misuse of warrantless searches, when you see people, for example, let's construct an example. Let's say somebody writes an email, and in that email, they admit they are cheating on their taxes. All right, so somehow this giant vacuum cleaner vacuums that up, and instead of discarding it because it's not relevant to a terrorist act, it's delivered to the IRS, and then you're arrested for tax evasion or something like that. I would say that would be my limit.
Okay, well, how would we ever know that investigations like that aren't prompted by this kind of surveillance, but in fact they say normally what happens on those kind of things, because they did this in Los Angeles. The police in the 1980s were illegally wiretapping people. They had skipped the process of search warrants, and they were just going out and wiretapping people, and they were gathering information about people that were doing criminal enterprises. And when they raided the places and they charged these people, they made up the stories that they had gotten all this information from informants that were secret.
Well, that's illegal.
Eventually the whole thing got busted. But the question is that when you allow unlimited wiretapping without warrants, without judicial surveillance, is this the normal corruption that follows, where information is gathered and dossiers are gathered about people, and these things sit there to the appropriate time when the government decides, well, this is somebody we need to take out. We'll just say that we had informants, and these, you know, we don't want to disclose the informants because they're undercover, and this is the normal corruption process that you're trying to stop when you...
Well, that is corrupt. I agree with you. That's corrupt, and that's illegal, what you just told me. But
But in those days, you needed warrants, and that's why it was illegal. If you have situations where there's no longer a need for a warrant, then who's overseeing all this? Or is it just now a free-for-all where the government listens to whoever they want, and we are truly in the Winston Smith 1984 scenario of everybody constantly looking over their shoulder to see if they're going to be the next ones taken in for interrogation and locked up indefinitely without a habeas corpus to bring them before a judge as well.
Well, you're jumping ahead there. I mean, that's not happening right now. So.
Well, habeas corpus has been suspended by the Bush administration for these individuals that were American citizens. I don't know. I'm trying to remember the one case, whether he was in Guantanamo or not. But he was held ongoing and never charged as being an enemy combatant. But he wasn't in an army anywhere. He was a U.S. citizen.
Actually, I think I'm aware of the case that you're talking about, and I think you're right. So, I'm not suggesting that warrantless stuff is good. I'm not saying it's great. I'm not saying I like it. I'm just saying that. If I was the president of the United States, Roger, and they told me that the kind of threat that we talked about a little while ago was indeed hanging over our heads, and my CIA director told me, look, in the current world we live in, with email, with voice over IP, with all of the different communications possibilities and people plotting to kill us, we don't have the names. We can't go to a judge because we don't have the names. And the only way, Mr. President, we're really going to be able to stop this is with this giant vacuum cleaner. But we're not going to misuse it. There's going to be oversight. I think as president, looking at this threat, I would say, okay. And I guess that's what our president has said.
Well, the question is, what is oversight? And what is the kind of oversight that's truly going to protect these constitutional values? The interesting part, if you go back to 1984, and when Big Brother put everybody under this gross surveillance, his justification for doing so, that everybody needed to give up their freedoms, was that there was this dark force out there, this enemy. We don't really quite know who they are, but we do know they want to destroy us. And because those people are there and we have to be vigilant about their aggression, everybody's going to have to make ongoing sacrifices for an undetermined amount of time because of this threat. And it is the mantra that comes out of 1984, that everybody has to have these surveillance televisions in their homes and also in the streets. And of course, you know, they're wiring videos in almost every city in America, and some of them are very sophisticated.
Yes, I'm aware of that. I certainly would not be in favor of having a camera, for example, in my home, and I don't think that's justified under the current level of threat that we have. I don't think it would ever be justified. I can't imagine everybody having a camera in their home, and I think that's going over the top here a little bit.
Well, then we better not cancel the Fourth Amendment, because that's particular for that kind of the shield around our homes is a Fourth Amendment shield. And if we start abrogating the Fourth Amendment and saying, oh, well, you know, we'll fudge it out here and no warrant for this or that, you know, it is mission creep against these founding fathers' intent. And I'm just, you know, we're on a slippery slope. That's all I can say.
Well, we are on a slippery slope in more ways than one, Roger. And again, if I were to, you know, put you into the position of being president, and I told you we were under this kind of threat, which, by the way, I believe we are, I just can't imagine you would say, sorry, you're going to have a warrant for any tap of any sort that you do. Otherwise, you cannot do them. Now, doesn't that cripple law enforcement under present circumstances, Roger, to the point where they're not going to be able to find the people that want to kill us, and therefore something truly awful is going to happen?
Yeah, of course, I'm not saying that, but I'm in agreement with the FISA, with the original question of why hadn't the Bush administration gone to the FISA court, because the FISA court said, hey, you got 72 hours, go ahead and tap away. But at the end of 72 hours, please come back to us for an authorization. Now, I think that was not unreasonable.
Well, I don't know what to say here. I think after giving it a lot of thought, I under the current level of threat to the United States, I as president, I think, would authorize exactly and pursue exactly what the president of the United States has pursued. And I know it's scary to a lot of people, and it's even scary to me, Roger, but I don't see any alternative. We do live in very different times. You'd be the one to certainly tell us about that. Now, quickly, well, now we're not going to have enough time. I really would like to just get a general definition for what data mining is.
Okay. Well, data mining means taking databases of all different natures and then putting them into supercomputers and making determinations about individuals. So let's say that we take all your phone records and all your bank records and your credit card reports and your health report and your GPS or your car black box information and your store purchases and your ISP browsing records and your library records and gas credit receipts and put all those things into a computer and massage all that information, we can come up with a pretty solid profile about how you live your life.
All right. Hold it right there, Roger. Roger Tulsis is my guest. I'm Art Bell. This, of course, is Coast to Coast AM, doing our own kind of data mining in the nighttime.